Welcome to Giant Cocktails, a podcast where two lifelong fans talk about the San Francisco Giants while drinking homemade cocktails. Now, here are your hosts, Ben and Matthew Henry.
Hello, and welcome to Giant Cocktails Midweek Review. I'm your host, Matthew Henry, the Sultan of Stats, here to slide you through this week's scores and pours. Joining me, as always, is the grandiose, the glorious, the man who mixes metaphors as smoothly as he mixes a Manhattan, Sir Benjamin Henry, the Duke of Doubles, and the Marquis of Martini. Today, we're breaking down the latest plays and sipping some top-tier concoctions. So grab your glove, pour your favorite drink, and let's get into the game. How you doing, Duke of Doubles, Marquis of Martini?
I'm doing pretty well. I like the fact that I am good at mixing metaphors as good as I am at mixing a Manhattan. But today, Matthew, I hate Manhattan because Manhattan is part of New York City. And New York City is where the Mets are.
That's true.
And I don't like the Mets because
it's Queens.
It's Queens. It's not really New York.
I mean, have you been? I mean, since you and I lived in New York, Queens is actually I heard had a revitalization and it's kind of the hip place where everybody lives. But when we were there, it was a dump.
Yeah, you kind of had to run. You know, you had to run. Like when you were there, right? And I remember we were runners. Yeah, I didn't go to the ballpark very much. And I think one time when I did, I didn't do it right. And so I was like in the wrong, you know, and I had to run. And then I think one time we had to jump a fence and I think our mother was involved. I don't know.
Yes, we had to push our mother over a fence.
It's all coming back to me. Yeah, yeah. New York sucks is what it,
that's our
what.
Our first game at Shea Stadium, which doesn't exist anymore. But at the time, we had to push our mother over a fence because we couldn't find a way to get into the stadium.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So let's get into the drinks. Ben, what are you drinking tonight?
Well, thank you for asking, Matthew. Tonight, I am drinking a cocktail that I am calling Cherries on the Side. And the reason for that is because I wanted to make a sidecar, but then I grabbed a different bottle on a whim, and I made this instead. It has 2 ounces of cognac, 1 ounce of cherry liqueur. I'm using Hearing cherry liqueur. 1 ounce of lemon juice, and then brandied cherries for the garnish. You take the cognac, the cherry liqueur, the lemon juice, and a shaker with ice, and you shake it until it is chilled. You strain that into a coupe glass. I did not double strain this time so I could get the nice little ice chips. And then I garnish that with 3 Luxardo cherries on a cocktail pick. And it's fine. And that's what I'm drinking today, Matthew. Cherries on the Side.
I'm not gonna lie. That cocktail sucked.
Man, I forget that you're here on Thursdays every time. You get me every time.
Oh, Bob's not holding anything back. All right. Well, so I'm bringing to the table a drink that it's a modern classic called, I'm sure that it's pronounced Juniperativo. I always want to say Juniperativo. So, because that's really how it should be pronounced, but this is a cocktail that I think was originally made with the Junipero gin, which I think the Giants might be sponsored by them, or I've seen some ads around that at some point. But anyway.
Well, we're not sponsored by them.
No, we're not. And so I'm not using them. I am using 2 ounces of London Dry Gin, which is a good substitute if you do not have the Junipero gin. 4 mint leaves, 1/2 ounce of lime juice, 1 ounce of simple syrup, and 1/4 ounce of grenadine. And you're going to muddle the mint leaves with the simple syrup, gently muddle them to release the minty oils. You're going to add all the other ingredients into a cocktail shaker with ice, shake it for a good 10 to 12 seconds until well chilled. You're going to double strain it because you don't want to have all the little minty chunks floating around. So you're going to double strain that into a chilled coupe glass and garnish it with a couple of mint leaves floated on top. And it's a refreshing minty drink. So anyway, that's what I'm drinking, the Juniperotivo Modern Classic.
All right. Well, I'm just looked up on their website, Matthew, and they say that junipero is Spanish for juniper berry. And since they said it's Spanish, I'm going to say that the pronunciation of the gin is junipero. Therefore, the cocktail is called the Juniperotivo. Juniperotivo.
That's how I would have said it. So let's go with that. I like it. Juniperotivo. All right. Well, today, folks, is Wednesday, April 24th, as we record this podcast. Since we last spoke to you, the Giants have gone 2-1 against the hated Mets, who came in like winning 9 out of their last 12 games. And folks, I'm doing really hard not to let recency bias affect my feelings of the last 3 games because, hey, we won a series and it was great. So we're now 12-14 and only 3 games back of the Dodgers for the lead in the National League West. So, you know, things could be worse, I guess is what I'm saying. For example, Ben, things could be worse when your top free agent, 2-time Cy Young Award winner pulls his groin.
I mean, things certainly could be worse. I mean, I could have pulled my groin. That would have sucked, you know. Probably in my sleep while I was in bed. You know, just wake up with a pulled groin.
It means you're dehydrated.
Is that what that means? I was about to make a bunch of non-family show jokes, but can't do that. It's a family show. But, you know, yes, it could be worse, Matthew. It could have been our number one pitcher who got hurt, or our number two pitcher who got hurt, or our number three pitcher who got hurt, or our number four pitcher who got hurt. But we lucked out. It was our number five starter who got hurt. And let's face it, you know, whenever our number five goes out there, well, I'd like to say we have a chance to win, but let's face it, at this particular location in the roster, I don't think we've had anything close to a decent outing all year. So, you know,
I can't think of it. Maybe the Giants have won one of the starts from that slot in the rotation, but I don't think so. I mean, they had the Dalton Jeffries meltdown early on, and then Blake Snell the last, what, 3 starts. So maybe not. Maybe we haven't. And so I guess my question to you, Ben, is what does this mean for the 5th starter position? Are we rocking and rolling with Jelly, Roop, and Walker from the here on out?
Here's what I think it means, Matthew. First of all, I think it means that the 5th spot in the rotation is going to continue to be a struggle. It's going to continue to be a pray for rain sort of situation. So I don't understand what happened here. Did he hurt himself on Monday significantly and they just wanted to wait and see until the last absolute moment? And I guess that's probably what happened. But anyway, the whole thing was very surprising to me. But the thing that was most surprising to me was that we came out with with Ryan Walker as an opener and having Landon Roop and the new guy, Mitch White, you know, who was so good this year, he got DFA'd by the Blue Jays. I was just kind of surprised by that because, like, don't we have other options?
Yeah, that was my thought because I felt like, what does this say about our farm team, our farm system, if we're scraping off relievers from the, you know, someone else's trash heap? Like, we don't have somebody that can come up and fill that role. And so if we don't, then the criticism is warranted, I think, of Farhan, because we should be done with that. You know, we should be done with that by now. We should have that in our system already. And the fact that we don't is not acceptable. But I feel like the bigger question is, you know, why aren't we calling up Mason Black?
Well, and that is exactly my question as well, especially when you consider that Blake Snell wasn't supposed to be a Giant. And Mason Black was the guy that was on the short track to being the number 5 starter. Remember it because, you know, Tristan Beck got hurt and then it was like, oh, Mason Black's going to be the guy.
Right.
And Farhan was comfortable with that. Everybody was like, yeah. And he was like, also, I really believe in the pipeline of starting a pitching that we have. This is one of the best prospects, set of prospects and starting pitching that I've ever seen. I don't even know that he said starting pitching. He just said pitching. And so we allegedly have this really strong farm system of all of these guys, including Mason Black, who was ready to start the season as a major leaguer. And now Blake Snell goes down and we get Mitch White. And, as part of a bullpen game. And I thought I knew why.
Well, I was just going to say that I feel like with Mason Black, one of the reason I don't understand why they haven't called him up yet is the fact that he's going to be Rule 5 eligible at the end of the season. So he's going to be having to put on the 40-man roster at the end of the season.
Right.
And so what does it matter? I mean, you need him now. And so it's not like the situation with Meckler where you brought him up
two years too early.
Yeah. You know, this is someone who's going to be on the 40 man next year. And
right.
So why not bring him up now if you need him now? And he's pitching lights out in AAA to the tune of like a 1.53 ERA.
In a hitter friendly league.
Right. So I feel like this is the only thing I can think of is that they don't want to put him on the 40 man knowing that they've got Cobb and Ray coming back. And then you've got they could use that spot for someone else.
I mean, but that means that Cobb's not coming back until May 22nd.
Right.
Ray's not coming back until the end of July or August.
Right. And
that's how long we're going to have to wait for those guys for Mason Black.
Right. And then I'm thinking like, well, and so you're saying that you'd rather have Avila, Tang and Dalton Jeffries on your 40 man over Mason Black. Like I just.
That does seem what it felt like, you know, it feels like is that they're protecting those guys and maybe they're not protecting those guys per se is they're just protecting their 40 man roster depth. Right. They have all of these layers to the onion that they can peel off and they feel like they don't have enough. Right. Because for a while I thought, OK, you know, maybe they were waiting to start the clock on Mason Black. But I did a little investigation there. And it turns out service time is based on, you know, a certain percentage of the year or number of days that you're on the 26-man roster. Well, it turns out you have to be on the 26-man roster for, I think, 172 days in order to qualify as a full year of service. And that's the whole season itself is only 186 days long. And this is based on actual days, not games. This is actual calendar days. And so really that's 2 weeks. Once 2 weeks have gone by, you basically prevent a player from accruing a full year. Now, I don't know how postseason factors into that. I don't think it does.
I don't think it does either.
But
no.
But so there's no reason to be holding Black back on for that reason. So I don't understand. Now, maybe I don't know when he last pitched. So maybe the timing was just off, right? He wasn't able to go today.
That's a good point. Yeah, that could be it.
And so
yeah.
Maybe we will see him soon, but Blake Snell is going to miss a number of starts. And so I would really like to see some Mason Black, please. I don't want to see you putting Ryan Walker followed by Sean Jelly, followed by Landon Roop, followed, you know, I don't want to see that. Until Blake Snell comes back, right?
Well, yeah, and not only is that kind of harkening back to previous regimes or previous years, but it's also, I don't feel like it's sound baseball sense, you know? And, you know, why wouldn't you want to bring a guy that's pitching really well up to the majors? So I'm hoping for Mason Black. You mentioned a couple other players in this, though. You know, we talked about last time about Jelly coming back and both Avila and Kaiwei Tang getting sent down. What we didn't see originally was that Roop was sent down for Mitch White until Snell's injury became apparent and they recalled Roop within, you know, a day. But it doesn't seem like the bullpen fixes that we were talking about 3 days ago are the bullpen fixes that we need. Or certainly didn't look good in the Mets. I mean, it is one game. I don't want to overreact, but certainly it didn't pass the eye test. And the bottom line is you got to throw strikes and these guys were not. And, you know, Roop has fallen in love with his curveball and and doesn't trust the fastball, it seems like, a lot. And so, you know, players are just kind of sitting on this curveball and forcing him to throw it for strikes. And so I don't know. I just the bullpen, it seemed like it was going to get ironed out, and it just all of a sudden there's a problem again. And I think that's going to be a work in progress for a while.
Well, I think with, you know, so first of all, yeah, I love that Roop got sent down and then had an outing, his second bad outing in a row, right after I had declared him as this year's Ryan Walker. So thank you for that, Mr. Roop. I mean, yes, he has gotten in love with his curveball, and that's because it's one of the best curveballs was the best curveball in all of minor league baseball, and is probably one of the best curveballs in professional baseball. But when you throw the same pitch over and over again, it becomes a problem, and people can just sit on it. It reminds me a little bit of, especially in Camilo's first couple of years when he was afraid of his fastball, right? That he couldn't control it, and so he would just start throwing his slider too much. So it feels like a little bit of that. So maybe we just need to see him trust his fastball more and use those two things together as effective 1-2 kind of punch. But like, I mean, as you said, like, we also talked about how they were fixing the bullpen by bringing up Jelly, and then they brought up, who am I forgetting? Jelly. Oh, Luke Jackson. You know, so Luke Jackson is back, and he gave up one hit today, but got his first three outs of the season to change his ERA from infinite to 27, which is a huge improvement. It is, in fact, an infinite improvement. He infinitely improved his ERA, Matthew. And so that was one fix that seems to be sticking. But, you know, Jelly had that first really good, great outing, and then today he's not. But I got to believe that at least Jelly and Jackson are better than Tang and Avila.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't, it's not fair to kind of just pinpoint one game and say it's worse. Right. But you would like for them to come in and have some success right off the bat.
Agreed. And then this Mitch White guy.
You're not going to convince me that was an upgrade. And I don't understand it. Do you remember the baseball quip about the old Boston Braves? I mean, this goes way back before our time. But it was spawn and sane and pray for rain.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And that was kind of the way that that was a famous poem, I think, that was kind of, you know, turned into that. I got one for us. So hear me out.
All right.
Webb, Hicks, and Wynn, and then let's do it again.
Okay.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, work with me there. I mean, maybe we could wordsmith it a little bit. But my point is, let's just have those three just over and over and over again.
I think Logan might be able to do that. You know, Logan might be able to go on a 4-man rotation, but unfortunately, that's a 3-man rotation. And I don't know if there's a way that we can kind of like try to like fit Kyle Harrison in there in a way that, I don't know, the other teams don't notice.
Yeah, then the rhyming doesn't work. Yeah. But okay, all right, we'll work on it. We'll work on it. But my, I guess my point is that starting pitching's still okay, and we saw a little bit of that in the Mets series. So one of the things that I think that we learned from the Mets series is that our starting pitching is still a strength. I mean, Logan Webb and Keaton Wynn both just shut down the Mets. And so, you know, I feel like that was a plus, and it's more, it gives me more and more. And I think it gives Giants and Keaton Wynn more and more confidence in their abilities and what they can do to help this team. And so, again, like, you know, Keaton Wynn was supposed to be the guy that goes to the bullpen when everyone comes back, and maybe there won't be maybe everyone will get injured at some point and it won't be an issue, but
probably.
But Keaton Wynn is making a strong case to be in the rotation year round, and you know, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be, because that's he's done a great job, and I actually now I'm getting excited about his starts.
Yeah. I mean, you should be getting excited about his starts.
I mean, you and I went to a start and he gave up a grand slam in the first inning. But since that grand slam, he's been lights out.
Right.
Like he pitched like shutout in a game after that. And then has done, you know, nothing but, you know, giving up maybe one run in each game. So he has done such a great job since that grand slam. If you go back and look at the numbers, it's something like a 1.5 ERA since that grand slam. So, yeah, I feel like he is part of the solution, not part of the problem. And I hope that he stays, you know, for the rest of the season.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen when they have the roster crunch, right? Because, you know, veterans, everybody lays down and backwards and sideways and somersaults to get out of their way to let them fit in the rotation. And so, you know, like if Cobb, Snell, and Ray are all healthy, I feel like they're all going to have to be in the rotation. And so
but then it becomes whether you're putting Hicks or Wynn in the
book. Right, right. Which really, I mean, and let's face it, at that point, probably if things continue the way they are, you're probably making the wrong choice. But I guess it's not a problem that we have now. So, you know, there's no point in really worrying about it. There was one name in here that you aren't mentioning that I am a little worried about, and that is Kyle Harrison. You know, he's not horrible, but he's not great. You know, I think in the last episode, I might have like insinuated or directly said that he was like a number three. He's more like a 4, 4.5 right now.
Yeah.
And that's mainly because his changeup is not working. He's only got one good pitch and he's in and around the strike zone all of the time. And he's given up a lot of hits. And for him, unfortunately, like, Keaton Wynn and him both, they both give up, as does Logan Webb, hard hits. The exit velocity off of them is, it's not like the highest in the league, but they're all kind of like in the bottom half, bottom third of starters. But the difference between Wynn and Webb together and Harrison is that Wynn and Webb give up grounders, right? And so we learned from Jung-Hoo Lee that hard hit grounders, did you know, especially when they're hurt to the
you could hit those all the time. Right?
Yeah, and they're just going to turn into outs, right? But what you need is line drives and fly balls, and that's what Harrison is giving up. So he's giving up a lot of hard hit fly balls and line drives, and that's turning into hits, and that's kind of working against him. So I hope that he gets that figured out. I hope that the changeup comes around so that he starts to turn into, you know, the frontline pitcher that we all hoped for, and I expected. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, you need three, at least three pitches, and that changeup needs to come around for him to be an effective starter.
Right, right. Well, he's got four pitches, but three of them are just bad. So, I mean, right now.
Yeah.
But he's got to turn it around just like somebody else has been turning it around recently.
Okay, good. Yes, that's a good segue because I feel like you were talked about line drives. And I'm like, speaking of line drives, Yaz has started to turn it around. And that's, you know, and there were so many fans that were talking negatively about Yaz and cutting him and all that. And the guy is a good baseball player that gave the Giants a lot on defense, even when he wasn't hitting.
Yes.
But when he's hitting, he's pretty much, I think, you know, the quintessential baseball player that you need. We need a guy that can play right field at Oracle Park, and he fits that bill. And you need a guy, you know, and you need him to hit a little. And lately, he's been coming up clutch, and I'm really excited to see that because A, not only do the Giants need it, they need that out of their right field position. You know, he's just such a good guy, and you know, it's always nice to see these guys who struggle come and turn it around. So I'm hoping that this is a sign of things to come. But he is actually the Giants' hottest hitter over the last seven games. He's hitting like 400 over the last seven games. And so I feel like we can officially say that the Yaz that we know and love is back.
Agreed. I don't know why we ever doubted him. I don't know why. I mean, you know, because we're ignorant.
Well, I mean, I mean, the numbers weren't good. I mean, he had struck out in like half of like he had 25 during a 25 at bat at Strang. He had 13 strikeouts.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So that was a rhetorical question,
Matthew.
It was a rhetorical question. I didn't need to answer.
Oh, okay,
I didn't need
to
answer.
Never mind.
Like,
then.
Yeah. No.
I don't know why we were questioning.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's time for a lightning round.
All right, here we go.
This is my best part of the show.
Ben, how much do they pay bullpen catchers? Because it feels like gift cards shouldn't do it when the lights go out and you're facing a 100-mile fastball.
I thought they paid bullpen catchers the same thing that they pay emergency goalies in hockey, which is a free food and ticket to the game. Did they get gift cards now, too?
Well, the bullpen coach for the Giants, and I should know his name because it was all over the place, but I'm too lazy to look it up. was a, you know, was in the middle of catching Camilo's when the first time they turned off the lights, you know, during his entrance. And boy, the clip went viral on social media of just as Camilo's letting go the last pitch in the bullpen, the lights go out. And I wasn't the only one. It seemed like there were many of us out there who saw that and just feared for that man's life. Like, can you imagine like sitting in a crouch with just a mask on, no chest protector, and all of a sudden the lights go out in the middle of a 98 mile per hour pitch? And thank God it was a fastball and not like a slider or something like that. I mean, the guy would be like, you know, they'd be digging his grave at this point.
Well, Matthew, I don't know if you know this or remember, but the last positions that I played when I played baseball, I was a little Craig Biggio. I played second base and catcher. And I played catcher because I was the only person on my team that was willing to catch most days. And so yes, I do know what that's like. I do know what it's like to have a ball thrown at you and just get beat up back there, but certainly not without the chest protector. By the way, he was the catching coach, and his name is Alex Berg. Alex nice. Berg. Yes.
All right,
poor Alex.
Well, Alex, mucho respect.
Yeah,
man.
Tons of respect. And I'm glad he got a raise from the chicken tenders, and now he gets chicken tenders and a gift card every game that he goes. Cool.
Well, if that's the compensation, I might apply for that job next year. Okay. All right. So next question, does Slater shaving his beard, which, you know, so he shaved his beard into this massive goatee.
Yeah.
Like it is like mountain man goatee.
Oh.
Does that mean he turns it around? And second part of the question is, if he just shaves off the bottom part, is that cheating when a mustache may comes around?
Is it cheating when mustache? I'm going to start with the second part first. No, of course not. A mustache is a mustache. Right? Like, you either get there from clean shaven or you get there from full grown. It doesn't matter how you get there. It just matters if you get there.
And you are so wrong. You are so wrong.
What, why? What you're saying then is that men with beards can't participate in mustache
making. That's right. Because part of the thing is watching these really awful mustaches evolve over the month.
Okay. So you're saying that gentlemen like me who can grow a beard don't get to participate in Mustache May because our beards embarrass the rest of you? Is that because our mustaches embarrass
you?
I
will change my mind if you participate in Mustache May.
Well, then that's definitely happening. It's definitely happening.
Sweet.
Good thing that nobody ever sees our faces.
Instagram and Twitter, folks. Except on social media.
That is true.
All right. Well, I agree. I mean, but the shaving of the beard, something had to happen, right? The mojo had to get changed. So Slater shaving his beard into a goatee, I think, was a necessary move in order to appease the baseball gods because, gosh, I mean, he's been
hitting
like
crap. I don't know
that
that's so sufficient, though, you ask me. I think if he had gone like Neapolitan, like, you know, like shaved just down the middle, shaved off the mustache and the goatee part, but left like big lion chops, or if he'd gone halfsies, you know,
halfsies would have been great.
Yeah, like
yes.
One side clean shaven and one side not. Now that the baseball gods would probably take interest then. But no, I don't think this is enough. I don't think this is enough.
I don't either. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Because straight on, you don't even see that he's gotten the side shave. Yeah. Anyway, all right. Last question. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, if you look at Soler's overall season, his OPS plus is respectable, and it's like 115 or something like that. But you look at his last 7 days, and he is hitting a cool 200.
Right.
Is this a problem, or is he okay?
I barely remember Jorge Soler throughout the entire season, Matthew. And at one point,
so that's a problem, That's a problem.
It is a problem. One point, I mean, his OPS plus has been as high as like 120. I just said in the last episode that he was coming around. So I don't remember him, but that doesn't mean like, you know, like he's hitting 200. Okay, next week he could hit 400, and then that would just even everything out, right? Because you're just talking about a few at bats. Like in a week of at bats, like one hit raises your average by like 30 points.
Okay, so what
points.
You're saying is he'll be fine then. He'll be fine.
I'm saying that he'll be fine, but what he needs to do is he needs to start hitting home runs in moments that matter. The only home run of his that I really remember is the one that he hit in the 17-1 game. And I don't even remember it. Oh, yeah, I do. It went down. Yeah. But, okay, now I remember three of them. They're pretty prodigious. But my point is, Matthew, he needs to start hitting more meaningful home runs. They need to matter.
Agreed.
They need to matter. So is he fine? Probably. But you know what? He needs to start hitting them when people are on base in front of him. And you know what? That's only half his problem. You know? That's only half his problem. He's got to get people in front of him on base, and then he's got to do something with it.
Okay. Well, and for the last week, he's 5 for 25 with one home run and one RBI. So yeah, so that's a problem in my book. But it's still early. Maybe he'll come around by the end of the year. He'll hit 25 home runs and have like 65 RBI.
Right. 6 divided by 25, by the way, is 0.24, which would be a .240 batting average, which is his lifetime batting average. So if he had one more hit this week, he'd be hitting his lifetime average for the week. So stop.
Why do you have to go and
because numbers matter. Like this.
Okay. They don't matter when you're watching from your heart, Ben. Ugh. All right? This is, you know, we're sitting here on our couch watching the big home run hitter not hit home runs. What? Or when he hits them, there's nobody on base. So I don't really care about your like, one extra hit and he's a lifetime .240 hitter, whatever.
You're all out of just so bent out of shape about your team not getting off to a hot start with its, you know.
All right. Yeah, you're right. Things are going to turn around. Maybe I should do my month of positivity just to kind of turn things around. I need it. Okay. All right. Well. So coming up on our next series is the vaunted Pittsburgh Pirates. Who are like, you know, 13-12 or 14-12, but they've also 3-7 in their last 10 games.
I don't care about any of that. I only care about one thing, and you know what it is.
This is the Joey Bart revenge series.
That's right. I can't wait.
So, Joe, my question to you, one extra bonus lightning round topic is how many hits does Joey Bart get in the three? What's the over-under for the
over-under is probably 10. I mean, it probably is. I think it's going to be a 3-game series. He's going to play he's probably not going to play all 3 games, but he might.
If the manager knows what's good for him, they're going to play Joey Bart all 3 games.
And let's face it, he's going to run roughshod.
He is.
He's going to have like 4 homers. He's going to hit like he's going to have 10 hits. The Pirates probably are going to like, you know, wow, you know, that I think about it, if the rest of the Pirates produce, that's a sweep.
All right.
Because we know that the Giants just cannot bend that much.
All right, so notables to play for both teams, Ben. There were a lot to choose from when I went in there. I mean, my gosh, I cannot believe how many Giants and Pirates there were. But, you know, we had Andrew McCutchen, of course, Travis Ishikawa. Jason Schmidt, you know, was an ace for the both teams. And of course, Barry Bonds. Can't mention the Pirates and the Giants without Barry Bonds.
Ryan Vogelsong?
Yeah, okay, him too. That's what I'm saying. There were a lot to choose from. There were a lot.
I mean, you could at least choose all the World Series heroes.
I could have gone even longer, but okay. Yeah, that's it. So, folks, enjoy the Pirates, the Joey Bart Revenge Series, and we will chat with you on Monday.
And that's a wrap on the Midweek Review, folks. Thank you for joining us. We will be back on Monday with the big show, where the cocktails will be stronger and the rants will be longer. If you can't wait that long to get your fix, feel free to reach out to us on the social medias. You can find us in Zuckland, a.k.a. Instagram and Threads, where we go by the username at Giant Cocktails. You can also find us on the Twitter, formerly known as Twitter, and Mastodon at the same username. Don't forget, you can also listen to us on YouTube, so run over there to like, subscribe, and comment. But most importantly, be sure to leave us a positive review. And it's not positive if it's not 5 stars. At your podcasting platform of choice, a.k.a. Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Matthew, you were mildly positive today. Keep up the good work.
Thanks. I'll try.
Cheers, my friend.
Cheers, Ben. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Giant Cocktails Podcast. Until next time, bottoms up.
amazing how much better it sounds when you actually like plan it out and write it out.
The funny thing is that I just banged that out. I banged that out in like 30 seconds, but last week I couldn't do it to save my soul. It's like if somebody came up to me and said, say something nice about your brother or he dies, you'd be dead. Oh, and then boom, I'm there at your funeral and I'm speaking and it's just coming out. It's just gushing. It's just gushing. Like a week ago.
And I'm like, oh, now you say it.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's how my brain works.